Eve Sussman's 12-minute film, 89 Seconds at Alcazar, a reimagined look at Diego Velázquez's masterpiece, Las Meninas, created quite a sensation when it was screened at the 2004 Whitney Biennial. After that, she and her art collective, the Rufus Corporation, went to Greece to shoot a film inspired by Jacques-Louis David's painting, The Rape of the Sabine Women. For her latest piece, White on White, Algorithmic Noir, they traveled to Central Asia. It follows a character named Holtz around a dystopian wasteland, and it is edited in real time by a computer program so that no two viewings will ever be alike. White on White debuted last month at the Toronto Film Festival, and now it's on view at the Kristen Tierney Gallery in Chelsea until October 22nd. I'm very pleased that it has brought Eve Sussman and actor and collaborator Jeff Wood to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Eve, over the years, you've said that the term video artist makes you uncomfortable, and in recent interviews, you've said that White on White is not a movie. What words would you use to describe your work and what you do?
Oh, boy. I don't know if video art makes me uncomfortable. I mean, I certainly embrace video art, but I'm really interested in being on the cusp, you know, being on the line between what is video art and what is film and trying to push the envelope of what it means to make a film. And so it's not a conventional movie. It doesn't have a beginning, middle, or end, and it runs forever.
It was screened at the Toronto Film Festival, as I said, and the Kristen Tierney Gallery has been converted into what feels like a movie theater.
Right. So we're using some of the conventions of film, and there is a lead actor, obviously, Jeff Wood, who's here today, and we have pieces of narrative that drive the algorithm, that drive the computer, but... And it was important that you feel like you're in a movie theater. And at the Toronto Film Festival, we also screened endlessly, you know, or ran all day long in a theatrical setting.
So what happens? Do people just enter when the film is already on the screen?
Yeah, you always enter with the film running, and you always leave with the film running. So there will always be things you don't see, just like life.
Jeff, didn't this project begin when you and Eve were talking over ideas about space?
That's right, yeah.
So how did it come to this? Your previous collaborations referred to paintings by Velázquez and David. The title of this one suggests that you were now thinking of doing something based on White on White by the Russian painter Kazimir Malevich. But his paintings were completely geometric. So how did that evolve into this?
Yeah, well, I think the abstraction, the geometric abstraction of Malevich's work sort of dovetailed out of our interest in going to space, or my interest in going to space, which came out of the production of The Rape of the Sabine Women, when we staged this 4 or 5 day continuous cocktail party in this house on the Aegean Sea in outside of Athens. And my character in that scenario at this house became preoccupied with the space race of that time, and I kind of became obsessed with the idea of going to space as a way of transcending this domestic malaise and this unending cocktail party that was just boring us all to death. So at a certain point, I kind of just began repeating, I'm going to space. I'm going to outer space.
In the past, you would have gone to Cape Canaveral. Now you have to go to Kazakhstan?
To Baikonur, to the Baikonur Cosmodrome, where Roscosmos runs the Russian space station. Yeah. They rent the area from the Kazakh government. And, yeah, as of the demise of the shuttle, which happened when in June, I believe,
yeah.
You know, now our astronauts and any cosmonauts or astronauts from anywhere in the world have to launch from Baikonur.
So what did you do? Just go to Baikonur? We want to shoot a movie?
I actually started looking into the real possibility of actually trying to go to space, and I was communicating with this company called Space Adventures that's based in Virginia.
It costs millions of dollars.
It costs millions of dollars, and I got through a certain amount of email chains with them, you know, determining whether, you know, whether I could actually go with contact lenses and all this business. And at a certain point, they wrote back to me and said, you know, This does cost quite a bit of money. And I was like, no problem. You know, but then Eve said...
Eve has a big budget for this.
Well, no, it's not that. It was just that I was kind of BSing my way through it. I just wanted as much information as I could. I didn't want to talk about the real aspects of it all. But Eve finally said, look, let's just go to where they go to space from.
And see what happens. And so we attempted to go to Baikonur. And, of course, it's illegal to enter Baikonur. It's a military base. You can't just enter Baikonur. So we
went there anyway and tried.
And got
arrested.
And
you were arrested and detained for how long?
About 5 or 6 or 7 hours. An evening up until the wee hours of the morning.
But we made it inside that
Yeah.
Because we were detained, we actually made it inside Baikonur.
We got dragged down to the police station inside the city of Baikonur, inside the town that surrounds the Cosmodrome.
But could you film there?
No. I mean,
because you were under arrest.
We were in a police escort, basically, and then held in the police station and questioned and went through the sort of the rigmarole. And now that detaining people has become so much more political, I don't know if we do it again. But at that point, we weren't so intimidated by the idea of being detained.
It got scary in the middle of the night. But
So when you arrived, you already had a pretty good idea of what you wanted to do here.
We had no clue.
Did you have even a plot line?
No.
Not in the beginning. No. The first trip, we had nothing except the idea that we had talked about Malevich and the main one of these very important quotes of Malevich, "I'm the commissar of space." You know, and so we took a more poetic or a metaphorical reading of that line. And you look at a white painting on a white ground, and of course you have to think about all the implications of space, both the literal and the metaphorical.
Although this is not very much a white-on-white kind of a thing. If anything, it's more like dark gray on black. Because you have created as a kind of a dystopian world, although in thinking about the Third Reich and Stalin's Soviet Union, the writer Margaret Atwood has coined the word eustopia, which is a combination of utopia and dystopia. And I got the feeling that that's the kind of world you're trying to create here.
Well, we didn't have to create it.
It was made for us.
We found it. Oh, we didn't find it. It was there, and we stumbled upon it, you know. So I think the entire... We had some initial concepts and ambitions, but the entire plot and character and the style structure were all developed organically on the road. But
just in response to this incredible landscape that you found yourself in?
Yeah.
Or cityscape?
Both. Landscape and cityscape, both.
Remarkable, I mean, overwhelming. Yeah. Overwhelming.
I mean, it's a road movie that kind of got developed on these, you know, 70-hour train rides.
But when did you decide that you were going to also introduce the element of chance into the whole thing? As I understand it, the film consists of 3,000 clips, 80 voiceovers, 180 pieces of music, and they constantly rearrange themselves with the help of a computer algorithm. If you weren't changing it, if you just ran it straight through, how long would it run, do you know?
There's about 30 hours of film and video material, and then there's these 75, 80 voiceovers. So it's really hard to say because it is always re-editing.
How does that work? You've called the process your serendipity machine.
Right. A young programmer named Jeff Garneau wrote the algorithm for us. He wrote many renditions of it. He's still updating it for us, actually. And it works based on the voiceovers and then based on sort of a hierarchy. So the voiceovers have hierarchy and are tagged, and then all of the video clips are tagged. And so based on this metadata, on this tagging or keywords, the clips and the tags and the voiceovers find each other, you could say.
So if the voiceover says something like, "I found myself alone at that moment," an image would be of him being alone would automatically be tagged?
Not necessarily. It depends on how we've gone in and physically tagged those voiceovers. So we might have tagged the birds on the word alone, for instance, to have a more, so I say, poetic meaning. Or we may have tagged alone. It depends.
So what happens here is that the sense of reality changes with each screening along with the plot. My experience of it was that it was almost like a dream where you feel like there's some kind of a plot developing, but then when you wake up and you recount it, you realize that there was a lot of stuff that didn't make any sense. Well, that did make sense, but didn't necessarily connect in the way that you'd expect it in reality.
And resolve itself, yeah, that's right.
Was that the idea?
It just sort of became the idea. I mean, I just started questioning, and together with the editor I work with, Kevin Messman, the idea of what it means to edit and sort of the hierarchy of the editor. And in American filmmaking especially, we really put the editor on a pedestal. And I certainly have respect for those great editors. And I think I'm pretty good. I certainly think Kevin is very good. But I was questioning that process, and I still thought a lot of what was most interesting about that process is serendipity. So how do you create more luck, more serendipity, more chances than you could ever manually make yourself?
Well, chance is something that artists have been playing with since the 60s. Andy Warhol's Chelsea Girls was never screened the same way twice, but here you've actually let a computer do the chance for you. And right. that's in an odd way, it leads to something that feels more logical. Mm. But when you were acting these lines, Jeff, was it liberating to know that your performance would change every time the film was shown?
Oh, well, it's interesting now to see that that's how it's developed. I think at the time, you know, you're just concentrating on what you're doing. So in the moment that I'm performing those lines or those scenes or whatever, I'm just focused on that particular scenario.
But there was a huge chance element too, because often we never knew where we would be, or we'd throw Jeff in with actors he had never met before who often didn't speak English.
No, 95% of the entire thing is improvised and was improvised on the road. So we have this element of this open-ended noir that I think the algorithm deals with.
And the noir also, in an odd way, makes reference to Jean-Luc Godard's film Alphaville. You have the beeping tones, stark photography of structures, the lack of special effects in a science fiction piece. The city is called City A, as it was in his film. How much did you want to evoke of his? Because his film, no matter how much it's supposed to be on another planet, is obviously in Paris. In you're shooting in a real place that feels like it's in another planet.
It does to us. From a Western perspective, for sure. From people from, say, ex-Soviet countries, not so much like another planet. They actually, some people do recognize where it's shot. But certainly, if you're from Europe or America, Western Europe or America, you probably don't recognize the locations. And they have a mix of feeling extremely dated or extremely futuristic. And that, to me, was really interesting, that we could conflate these five or six or seven locations together to create a futuristic noir cityscape that you couldn't place.
The film was shown at the Toronto Film Festival. Now it's in an art gallery. Do audiences react differently in the different venues?
Hard to tell.
When you go to an art gallery, you're expecting to see art.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to the film festival, you're usually expecting to see a narrative film or an experimental
right.
film.
Right.
More and more festivals have these.
Yeah, more and more festivals are including these installation-y video art type of sidebars within their programming. I think a film audience is going to expect to go and sit there for a while. Often people walk into a gallery and think they can be in and out in 5 or 10 minutes. And so sometimes you'll find someone who will come in and become a bit frustrated because they realize they have to spend time. And then some people will come in and get sucked in, and an hour will go by and they don't know that they've done that.
Well, there's something hypnotic about the film, so I'm suspecting a lot more people will stick around for a while. Just one more thing. It's by Yves Sussman and the Rufus Corporation. What's the Rufus Corporation?
Oh, it's a conglomerate of people, an ad hoc group that has a number of people like Jeff who we've worked together since 2003, I think,
yeah.
And a number of others who I've sort of had a long-term relationship with, and then people who come in for specific projects. So it's a way of referring to a collaborative group that's outside of myself, for instance, and involves anything from two or three other people to 100, you know, in the case of The Rape of the Save on Women, where we had many, many extras.
And often you work with non-professionals. Jeff, you're one of the few working actors in these things. Is it weird working with people who are acting for the first time?
No, because on most of the projects we've done, we're kind of out there in the world improvising. So on this entire project, I was working with people who may or may not have been actors, you know, working with people on the train and in restaurants and, you know.
And then
anybody that we encounter, and some wonderful, wonderful actors that we work
with. In Octal,
yeah.
I understand that there's a live musical performance that will be running with the film on Friday the 21st at 6:30 at the Kristen Tierney Gallery. What's that all about?
Oh, we're very excited about that. Together with Algis Kizis, who's one of the composers who's put compositions in the film, and he's music director and conductor for the project, for the performance on Friday, we're coming up with a way of taking all of the score elements out of the movie and a system and rules and chance operations that will allow the musicians to create the score live.
Too bad Charles Ives isn't alive. I would have loved this. It's free, but RSVPs are required.
Yeah, because it's very limited seating.
More information, go to our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to Eve Sussman and Jeff Wood for being on our show today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Nice to be here.